Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is the audio version of the Cultaholic Classic Nitro Review. You can watch the video version and take part in a future episode by going to patreon.com/cultaholic.
Tonight, in this evening of main events, the Dungeon of Doom and the Four Horsemen join forces as Ric Flair and the Giant battle against Macho Man Randy Savage and the immortal Hulk Hogan. They have already made their mark. They are public enemy. They'll meet the Nasty Boys. The Mexican heavyweight title is on the line. Conan takes on the wild and unpredictable Psychosis. Tagging up are Sting and Lex Luger versus the Blue Bloods. Plus a match made in heaven. You are invited to attend the wedding of Sherry and the Colonel. Tonight, live from Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas, World Championship Wrestling and TBS present Clash of the Champions.
It's showtime, folks!
This is where the big boys play, huh?
Woo! And look at Goldberg! He's ready!
Oh, hell yeah! It's going to be the biggest battleground in the history of our sport.
Welcome to the Cultaholic Classic Nitro Review. Clash of
the
Champions.
Classic, you said.
Classic. I never even planned that.
Oh,
that's what it's going to be.
Well, you've gone way down in my estimations now.
I definitely
planned
that.
Now hiring.
No, not again. Classic review. It is, because it's the classic review.
Yeah.
Because it's Clash of the Champions.
An hour and 40 of gold from 1996. Let me tell you all that.
Define gold.
I mean, it's definitely gold in colour, but I think the closer you get to it, the more you see like the bubbled up shitty spray paint. It might even be like that hairspray you get that you kind of wash out rather than actual spray paint. They've just kind of right in.
It's our first dabbling of the spray painted gold that is Clash of the Champions.
It's certainly a night.
It is a night.
It's a night that happened.
Yep. Do you remember now, as a WCW kid, did you get Clash of the Champions?
I don't remember, man. I remember we would get like certain weeks it'd be like cut down episodes for no reason. Certain weeks it'd be like if it was post pay-per-view, you'd get, obviously you'd have like your pay-per-view recap in Nitro, but sometimes you'd get like a little trimmed down thing that got kind of tacked on to the start of it. But
it kind of, because it was a TBS TV special,
and
this particular occasion it was done to sort of try and stick it in the eye of the WWF, who were running the Royal Rumble that same period,
and they
just whacked up the price of the Rumble as well, and this was a free event.
This was the whole thing, was WWF are charging more for their product, and WWF, if you go and meet the stars, will charge you $15 a photo, and if you want to hold one of the belts, you got to pay for it. And they did this whole little crusade for 2 weeks on WCW TV of like, but we're on top of the world and we love our fans, so we're never going to charge you for anything.
Mm-hmm.
So Clash of the Champions is free. Don't ask about any more of the pay-per-view events moving forward, because they are still going to cost money. But Clash of the Champions is free, and it's a special. It's a pay-per-view quality special. Mm. It's like when they put Starcade on the network, isn't it?
Basically, is what we've got
big,
here.
Big house show with slightly more repercussions.
It's a house show with extra steps.
Yeah.
And we're here to talk you through it. Who be we? I be Fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio, Tom Campbell, with the resident WCW kid, Sam Driver.
Does anyone have a portfolio anymore?
I mean, I think they must. So, like, not even like a physical one anymore.
Because I got asked, somebody asked me the other week, it's like, do you have a showreel? And it's like, I've not had a showreel since like 2013.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, it's weird.
I used to do radio demos. I put together demos. I haven't done one of those in a long old time. That was a thing that happened back in the day. But yeah, I mean, I guess no one does. They all even calling it an e-portfolio sounds old.
It's like when you, I don't know, like I remember there was a trend when I was leaving uni that it was like, instead of saying that you have like 5 years experience using Adobe Premiere, how about you do a little like circle pie chart that like a power-up on a video game, and like out of 1 to 10, you put a number and you make a fun little graphic. And it was like, why am I wasting all my time doing this?
Just to make it look like you had like, more in your arsenal than
did. Just to make you look creative. And it's like, do you not think it's funny that we're all going to have the exact same CV after this? Mm-hmm. And this was done for like originality and creativity, but whatever. Yeah, let's all have the same graphics. And
what's your tattoo say? Individual. Why'd you get that? Well, my mates have got one. It's that old thing, isn't it?
It's like being a non-conformist with other non-conformists. Non-conforming in a similar fashion together, but non-conformally.
Did you have a non-conforming weekend?
No, I conform pretty heavily to some sunshine drinks.
Nice.
And then just essentially melted. Melted some more. I had two fans on the go last night within like feet of me, like just blasting at me. And it was just hot air. I had every window in the building open, just hot air, no breeze. I was just sat there. And then, I had to do shit. Like, I couldn't just be sat there doing nothing. So TV's on, which generates a lot of heat. And PC was on, which generates a lot of heat. And then I'm just sat there dying. I think I just kept making ice all day. That's all I did for the last 3 days, is just make ice.
I know we've all talked about the weather and stuff, but my God, last night in particular, intolerable.
Brutal. Like, I slept curtains open, window open, on top of the bed. Fan blasted off me. I think I just stepped into a freezing cold shower before bed and then just lay with the fan on to try and cool myself down.
I think at one point I tried to lie on our veranda balcony.
Yeah.
And it was incredibly uncomfortable. But I thought, if it's cooler, it's worth it.
I didn't have a hammock,
sadly. I'd literally lay on a towel on the balcony. And I was like, it's no warmer or cool. It's no cooler out here.
My new place has got like, because it's in like an older building. Mm. So like part of the older building, which you can't get to, is a massive, massive, massive patio raised up garden area that you can't access.
What?
And I was just sat there the entire weekend looking at that like, at least there'd be a breeze out there. I'd be no better off. I'd be sweating like hell, but at least there'd be a breeze out there.
I want to be Although where the patio is.
I went to Tesco yesterday because it was like, it was so hot. I was like, I'm going to get like a couple of Magnas or something.
Going to hang out in
so
Tesco.
So I went and got some like fruit and just got some nice like sunny day stuff. Got a couple of ciders. But the second I stepped into that Tesco, mate, it was like heaven. All the freezers were on full blast. I just sauntered around Tesco and spent like 20 quid I didn't need to spend. Like, well, I'm nearly out washing tabs. I've got 20 left. I'll just put these in the basket and slowly walk around some more, and just opening the freezers for even more cold. It was great. It was really busy.
Sam moved on like an hour later for falling asleep in the freezer. In the freezer section.
Like Jasper.
That's the way to do it when it's too stupidly bloody hot. And I know you've heard a lot of English people complaining about the heat, but here's the thing, right? Here's the thing that I think our friends over the pond forget, is that here in the UK, it's traditionally bloody cold, right?
Cold, wet, sometimes fucking snowy and thundery.
Yeah.
That's what I like. So that's what I like.
That's great, innit?
And it's like I would happily live in New Zealand, slightly better summers, slightly colder winters. I would happily live in Scandinavia, certain places, slightly better summers, much colder winters. I love being cold.
It's nice.
As a bigger guy, I love being cold.
Because you can do more about it.
Yeah, you can put fucking layers on. You can't take your flesh off when it's too warm outside.
Believe me, I tried yesterday.
I think, you know, but people live in so many different climates. So, I mean, Christ, down south, they got to, what, 42 degrees?
Yeah.
Which, yeah. I think I rolled over at one point, it was 38 in my living room. And I was like, I'm done.
But this is the problem.
I couldn't be indoors in like 42 degrees. Could you imagine?
No, because our homes are designed here in the UK.
To retain heat.
To retain heat because it's so cold. So therefore, like my home did a bang-up job yesterday of retaining heat. The best job of retaining heat. Well done, home. You retained all the heat.
My bedroom has one openable window. So it's got like a big 3-bit window, but only the middle bit's openable. And because it's on the top floor of the building, it just gets beaten down on it all day by the sun. So regardless of whether you have the windows open or not, and the bathroom's got like one of those Velux windows, I just had that fully open, just like, get in as much as you can. It just bakes. So like the entire thing, you go upstairs, it's been open all day. You maybe before bed, got to put the fan on by the open window just to cool it down a bit. No, it was still like walking into an oven. It was... Jesus.
Hoping by now we'll have had how some people of those thunderstorms that we
No, I've not heard. I've not heard now. It's going to get clammy before it gets thundery.
I believe that was a song in the 90s. We are going to go back to the 90s now to dissect Clash of the Champions from January 1996. Now,
well, it was probably a nice 2 degrees over here.
Celsius. It probably was,
yeah.
Wasn't it? Yeah,
great, that.
Northeast, it was probably 2 degrees.
Yeah, nice and chill.
A lot of ice. You were defrosting the car before you headed out the morning of this show.
That's what you want. Roll around in it. Wake yourself up.
That's it. That's what you want in it. Now, this show is recorded literally the day after. It's live the day after Nitro.
Yeah.
So nothing in the world has changed. There's no new wrestling news and bollocks. So we're just going to dive straight in to Clash of the Champions from the night after Nitro that we just talked about last week.
But don't worry, we're not just going to jump straight in. We're going to have about 5 minutes of shite at the start
first, of course.
We need to preload the show with everything that's going to be on the show. So in no particular order, except the order they were said, you essentially had a bit of bump about how magical tonight's going to be from Mike Tenay and... Was it
Tony Schiavone and
Tony
Schiavone Bobby Heenan.
And Bobby Heenan just kind of like buddying up and, oh, it's Vegas and, oh, you know what that means and, oh, it's amazing. And then very quickly devolves into, hey, the Road Warriors are back and Elizabeth is back and also there's going to be a wedding. Gene's allowed out of the house. He's going to cover the wedding.
Yeah, so after Tony and Bobby welcome us to the night... we head to where Mean Gene is stationed tonight. Bless him, they've let him off the ramp. He is outside a little white chapel in Las Vegas.
Not just a little white chapel, the little white chapel.
I thought
Tom.
It was called a little white chapel.
It probably is.
But it's a little white chapel.
Yeah, it's like the one. I think anybody else who tries that shtick gets sued into the ground.
That whole thing. That is where Colonel Robert Parker and Sister Sherry are going to get married tonight. The biggest wedding in the history of wrestling.
We'll tell you one thing. They would not take me and Ross for a wedding, the little white chapel.
Would they not?
No, it would have cost like 5-6 times more.
Oh, Scheiser. Gee, so where did you end up getting married?
The Westgate Casino.
Westgate Casino.
I can't remember the name of the chapel, but it was at the Westgate Casino.
There you go. So we're going to put a little blue plaque up there next time we're in Vegas.
They should, yeah. It was opposite the nondescript Raiders NFL shop before it was confirmed the Raiders were moving to Vegas. They just had this massive, in nearly all of the casinos, this massive shop just selling Raiders stuff, but without Oakland on it and without Las Vegas. So just Raiders, kind of like Albuquerque in The Simpsons.
I like the idea that the team would have been called the Nondescript Raiders. Go Nondescript! So the venue that was too expensive for Ross and Sam will host the wedding later on. Gene throws us back to the arena. It's going to be a busy night, as we've already said. We've got Hogan and Savage versus Flair and the Giant. Hogan and Savage have their secret weapons in their corner.
Yes.
Kevin Green from off of the Super Bowl this weekend.
Kevin Green as well.
Big boy Kevin Green. And the returning to wrestling, the debuting for WCW, Miss Elizabeth.
What did they say? Did they say a full decade or half a decade? I can't remember when it was.
A decade.
A decade.
I think it's a decade of destruction. No, it would have been half a decade. Half a decade. It's been a long time since we've seen Miss Elizabeth. So everyone's excited to see what she looks like these days. Mm. The Road Warriors, as you say, also tease tonight. But we've got tag team action of a different kind straight off the bat. It's the Public Enemy taking on the Nasty Boys.
This is... certainly something.
Oh, wow.
You know, you go into an event, you want to start strong.
Mm-hmm.
There is no stronger start than Public Enemy versus the Nasty Boys at Clash at the Champions 1996.
We get a short video of Rocker Rock and Johnny Grunge hanging around in a junkyard next to some
You can't hear a
cars.
Fucking word they're saying.
Weird
it's just
bit that was.
Blah, 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 while their music's piped in over the top.
Cut to the ramp where Rock and Grunge are walking to the ring with their music piped over. Weird bit, that one. Nasty Boys representing Pity City. See, on their way out.
I'd forgot, and I just didn't know that they were facing off against the Nasty Boys. How fucked do the Nasty Boys look in 1996?
They do.
In 96. In 96. They're still fucking going, aren't they?
I know Nobbs had a health scare, but I don't think that would have stopped him.
I mean, the style of wrestling, obviously, it's something that can be managed.
They do less hurricanranas these
days.
Yeah,
it's more like, you know, brawling. But fucking hell, the Nasty Boys.
I've put in italics here in my own notes. I don't believe for a single second the Nasty Boys are going to put the Public Enemy over. Well, the Nasty Boys theme. We haven't heard this yet on the Nitro review.
No, we haven't.
I wrote the lyrics down.
Okay, go for it. Hit me with them.
We're the Nasty Boys. We've got a bad reputation. When you see the Nasties coming, you'd better change your direction. Close. Everybody
Why
talks.
Why wouldn't they change it to location?
Location would have felt better, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Because location, reputation has a better ring to it than reputation, direction.
And it's like you change your location. You don't just change where you're standing. You move cities. Nobody wants to be near Saxon.
Don't be anywhere near Pity City, thank you. Everybody talks, but we know talk is cheap. If you mess with the boys, we'll rearrange your teeth. Again, close, not a bullseye.
You know they're going to do a bad job of it as well, though, because their teeth are bad because of all the fighting.
Yeah, that's it. They're going to ruin your teeth.
Yeah, just like theirs.
Yeah, and they'll put them in a certain order. And
DMD.
Dear my days. We're the boys, we're the boys, we're the Nasty Boys. We're the boys, we're the boys, we're the Nasty Boys. If you ever get in trouble and you need our protection,
right,
don't call 911 because they'll be too late. We're the Nasty Boys.
You couldn't fit an erection joke in there.
I've got that wrong. We're the Nasty Boys. We're like a real bad infection. If you're ever in trouble and you need our protection, that feels better. Don't call 911 because they'll be too late. We're the Nasty Boys and we'll rearrange their face.
It's the Ron Seal of themes.
That's really polite.
It's shit, but you can't argue that it fits them perfectly.
And it also reveals to the wrestling world that...
You could also change it to Rotten and it'll work for Ian and Axel. It's...
Honestly. We're the rotten boys.
Hardy boys, in a way.
We're
maybe.
The Hardy boys. Dudley boys.
Yeah.
It's also, in terms of teams from that era, it reveals that the Nasty Boys actually piloted the APA gimmick long before the APA. Because in the song they say, we're the Nasty Boys, we're like a real bad infection, if you ever get in trouble and you need our protection.
I loved
Nasty Boy PA.
I loved the APA. The whole shtick of them being hired guns.
I think that's a gimmick that could still go today.
Oh, for sure. For sure. It's not been done in a while either.
I'd have Von Wagner from NXT. I'd be Wagner for hire.
It never works. It never works. And they'd give them a different shitty name now that sounded like it was generated, you know, like in some think tank by 100 different people. But like,
Manatees.
It never works ever. But a new APA, I would be all over.
Yeah. I think, yeah.
If they just called them the new APA and just tried their hardest.
Who'd be in the new APA?
Well, Von Wagner, I think, works really well in the Bradshaw role.
Von Wagner.
Or W. Morrissey. He'd work very well in the Bradshaw role.
Nice. I like W. Morrissey. I mean, Enzo and W. Morrissey would be great like that. Just Enzo just being the little gobshite.
No. You've gone too far now, Tom.
You've ruined it. Do you know... In the AWA, the Nasty Boys came out to Nasty by Janet Jackson.
Moving on.
It's a good theme, that. It's a banger.
How the fuck does that fit? Oh, my God.
Because it's got Nasty in the title.
It's like Conan later on coming out to a shitty Eye of the Tiger ripoff. Yeah. It's like great. It's so fucking good.
Nose of Le Tigre. They immediately brawl to the outside to the enemy and the Nasties. Grunge and Nobbs get in the ring whilst Rocco and Sags fight around ringside. Rocco randomly attempts an old school off the barricade.
Yeah.
And then Sags kicks the barricade and low blows him off it.
Yeah, RIP nuts.
RIP denuts. Sag leaves from this and comes back with a table.
Sags nips to home base, I'll have you know.
Just as a quick little
pop
around the corner.
Points card. round to home base. Got Eric 5 points that he's going to put toward his new like Deccan this summer.
Deccan and plant pot.
You might be able to get some stain with that.
Some Ron Seal for the next theme.
That's it.
So, I didn't like Sags getting the table. Isn't the table the public enemy's thing?
Yeah, and then Sags puts it up backwards in the middle of the ring. So legs first.
Well done, mate. You are the best.
Which, it's a completely wooden table, so I don't think it really would have mattered. But, you know, when you've got a table, you don't want to be sending somebody into the side with all of the screws and legs and bits that are going to hurt extra when you've just got a nice big flat bit that it'll snap cleanly in half.
I've never put a man through a table, but I would know to not do it that way.
Yeah, it's just, especially now, you know, you definitely can't get away with that now.
No.
Just slash people open. I mean, look at Bob Holly's back.
Oh, that was that thing from ECW 2006.
And that was just the rubber stopper. That wasn't even the metal. There's the rubber rib of the edge of it kind of lifted up and just went slice.
Oh.
And it's just like, hoo-hoo, and the referee kind of goes, hoo-hoo. And then everybody's kind of stood looking at his back going, hoo-hoo. And he's like, what? What, guys?
And then Mario
hurts a bit. What's going on?
They're all just going, hoo-hoo. And then Mario pops up and goes, "Whoa!" Mr. Toasty pops up and goes, "Whoopee!" So Rocco lands a moonsault.
Yes.
Lovely standing moonsault. Only gets a 2. Grunge ends up eating a pile driver shortly after this, courtesy of Stags. We get to the finish from here.
Can we just, we get to the finish, can we discuss the fact that I think it takes roughly 3 minutes for a single wrestling move to be thrown in the match? Which is a point because it's, you know, it's Public Enemy, they're wild. It's Nasty Boys, they're wild. It's a bit of a kind of wee from commentary. But it's like a takedown. It's something really just, it's like, oh, takedown. That's the first wrestling move of the bout. And it's like 2 minutes after the bell's
they
gone.
They even say it, don't
so
they? They go, hey, that was a wrestling move.
Yeah.
Wow. The finish is so odd because they've set the table up and they're kind of directly...
You've got like, Chekhov's table going on.
Yeah. And it's been in the ring for a while.
Yeah,
but now they've
in the corner.
Repositioned it. And Sags and Nobbs are directing traffic. No one's gone through the table, but the ref just decides, ah, fuck this. Ding, 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 ding.
Yep.
Like no one went through it.
Nope.
Now, I think if you're going to do the DQ, you wait for someone to go through it.
It's like the referee's preempting bad. It's like Minority Report reffing.
Right.
Like, he's got, before anybody gets hurt, I'm calling this off. Ooh. And they're like, the match is thrown out, guys. Ooh. Ooh. Sassy referee.
And the wrestlers went, oh, the match has stopped. We will quietly head to the back.
That's
then.
Right. They all shook hands. They hugged babies in the front row and took pictures. And
because they
went to a Denny's
the
and they got the early bird special.
Oh.
She's using American terms now. I've no idea what they mean.
It's Cornette's favourite, isn't it? The early bird special.
Probably.
Yeah. Just a thought.
No idea.
Anyway, they don't do any of that because Rocco lands a moonsault that kind of breaks the table.
Kinda.
It kind of breaks the bit of the ceiling around the sides.
It breaks the edge and then Sag sees the edge, grabs the edge and proceeds to literally smash it in half over Rocco's back, I think. Or is it? It's Johnny Grunge's back, and then Rocco gets. Is it Rocco who gets that awful dump to the outside?
No, you got the bits right, but not in the right order. So Rocco gets like beaten with the bit of the table.
Yeah,
and then as Grunge is leaving, Sags just throws the table over the top, and it just crashes on his head.
Yeah, but there's hold on. Yeah, it's Rocco. Rock I've got here. Rocco Rock gets fucking pinged off the apron by Nobbs just before the DQ's called. So like. He's like on the outside. It looks like Nobbs is going to throw him, but then it looks like there's kind of they get caught up in the baggy clothing or something because Rocker Rock kind of comes over and he's sort of in momentum, stops for a split second, and then just kind of goes like really uncomfortably, like shaves his back off the apron corner. And it's like,
oh, it was not a happy time. Great work by the Nasty Boys for putting over the brand spanking new team and making them look like a threat. End sarcasm. Fuck you both.
Yeah, it's that particular launching the bit of fucking table from the ring to the outside was like, what are you doing? But, you know, it was memorable. This is still 96 WCW. They aren't quite sure about what they're doing with hardcore style stuff. They just know that people like it. They know that people like the kind of wild nature of it and anything can happen. It had been proved to have worked many, many years before in the territory system. But just a quick one here. Once again, start strong on your pay-per-views, everybody, with a barn burner of a match like this that was brought to you by McDonald's.
Yeah!
Which is good because Ray Kroc, even though he'd been dead since 1984, fucking deserves it. Ray Kroc is a piece of shit.
Is he the guy
Ray Kroc is the man that came into the McDonald's Brothers business, took it from underneath them, and then kicked them out of their own business, and then took their own name from them.
From the film The Founder, you can tell that story.
He's a fucking milkshake salesman.
Yeah.
And that's how he stays in my mind. He's a monstrous person.
He kind of tries to, from basing it on the film, he kind of tries to bring the McDonald's boys along with his vision, but they're not really buying it.
It's because they don't want to become corporate like whores. And so what he does is he changes McDonald's into a real estate business, and now McDonald's owns the land the restaurants are on. And that's his business, not theirs. And then he slowly chokes them out to the point where the original restaurant that they run can no longer have their name on it.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
I had a really nice egg bagel the other day.
You fucking don't eat there anymore.
It's really
not
nice.
Funding Ray Kroc's little family's pockets. The piece. He might have invented several things that people enjoy about McDonald's, but he's a monster.
The man is a monster.
He's a monster.
So if Mean Gene is outside the chapel, who is on the ramp tonight in the sleeping bag?
Well, he's conspicuous by his absence so far this evening.
Yeah, Eric Bischoff is here, baby. He's doing the interviewing folk on the ramp shtick this evening. And his first task of the night is to chat to the trio of Jimmy Hart, The Giant, and Ric Flair. Flair says, among the bright lights and the pretty lazies, losing the WCW title doesn't mean anything to him.
He also says publicly that a little girl told him that with Flair she was going to fantasize, with the Giant she was going to giant size.
That's
so would
worrying.
You care to elaborate there, Paul?
That's a worrying sentence there. All round. Giant laughs this off and says, what a lovely night we'll have. If Flair tags him in, it's all over but the crying for Hogan and Savage.
And then Flair ends things by saying, tonight Macho Man and Hogan can't hide behind Flim Jim and Paywatch. I like that.
And then and ends by saying, they are facing, quote, a fire-talking giant.
Yes.
Is that them collectively?
I have no fucking idea.
Or did he try and say fire breathing, but then realise he said talking and went, just get this done.
Plus he can't breathe fire. You'd think that he would have breathed fire already if he was wanting to come in and make an impact.
Yeah.
Dungeon of Doom would be all over that.
You would, wouldn't you? You'd be all over the shop if that.
It'd be like, you know, this is our new wrestler. He's called The Giant. He's the son of another pretty famous guy. But look what he can do that his dad can't do. Barbecued Hogan.
Done.
Yeah, done.
That ends Hulkamania.
Really well
like
done.
That.
Really well done, Hulkamania.
That literally ends Hulkamania.
And then we move on to Karate Fighters.
Oh, now this is fun. So Karate Fighters sponsored loads of WWF stuff in the late 95.
Yes.
And now they're getting in on the WCW side of things as well. If they pop back up again, we'll have to get the Karate Fighters
a product that Bischoff was involved in initially?
There was some conversation that said that he was, but I don't know. I think there was a spin-off that he was.
I remember he got his start with Gagne, I think, because he went in to sell ad space for this product.
Mm.
But he was a wrestling fan as well. And then I think it kind of led from there to, hey, our usual guy hasn't shown up. You're a spokesperson-y type thing. Can you do it? And then that evolved into Eric Bischoff and the rest of the business. I don't think it was Karate Fighters, but it was like a really similar thing.
A product that was like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, it's nice that Karate Fighters are now, I'm sure Bischoff's delighted with that.
Oh, yeah. He's all about the karate and the fighting. Black belt, black belt, black belt.
Also,
don't worry about it. 4 years' time, that's going to mean something.
It's also sponsored this week by Slick 50 Engine Lubricant.
That's right. And it's fantastic Money for Nothing video style graphics.
I thought you'd get
the bottle just
that.
Spinning around on the spot and then falling over into the giant yellow deserty road. And then Tootsie Rolls, which suck fucking ass. Tootsie Rolls.
How many licks
crap.
Did it take to get to the center of
They're
Slick
terrible.
50 engine lubricant?
I'd rather drink Slick 50 engine lubricant than eat a Tootsie Roll ever again. I remember, like, you know, the first time you get American candy over here and it's just like, oh God, like, let's try all of the things
you
see.
It's been around for 100 years.
For, like,
it must
years.
Be good.
And then you get like a Tootsie Roll. You try like a fucking, what are they called? The boiled sour motherfuckers.
Boiled sour motherfuckers.
Because you get like Mike and Ike and stuff. Everybody likes that. What are they called? They're like sour, hard, multi-flavored.
Hard candy? Not called hard.
They're like a hard candy. Jolly Ranchers.
Jolly Ranchers,
which are delicious.
Jolly Ranchers.
You know, there's all sorts of stuff you can get. All sorts of stuff you can get. And then you get Tootsie Roll and it's like, fucking hell. This is just... It's like somebody got chocolate sand, wet it a bit, right? Just wet it a bit, formed it into like a dog shit of a shape, and wrapped it in foil. And then you just kind of chew into it and it's a bit chewy. Tastes vaguely of like a memory of chocolate. It's the type of thing that I think in like a post-apocalypse, if there was a warehouse full of it, people just leave it alone because like it would just faintly remember them of that, remind them of a simpler time where you could complain about how shit this chocolate tasted. But it's just so bad, man. It's so bad.
It's pretty miserable consumption. It's why the Tootsie Rolls never made it over here, and they never will.
No, and our Milky Way's better. Fuck you guys.
How many licks does it take for you to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll? classic@cultaholic.com is our email address if you'd like to let us know. We couldn't care less. Alex Wright and Dean Malenko up next. Now, this is a little story that they've been telling on Saturday night.
Which means we can skip the whole match.
No, we have to talk about the match because it's on our watch. It's on our watch, damn it. But it's fine because the story's dead simple, which is nice. So basically, Alex Wright has had his leg paggered by Dean Malenko for several weeks, and that's why they're fighting. Wright, you can tell, is livid about this because he's not even smiling tonight.
Well, that's commentary is like, no smiles from Wright tonight. He's a serious, sexy German boy.
He is a serious and sexy German boy. Dean Malenko out following that one. We have an excellent technical encounter here.
And it's great because the crowd don't know what the fuck to do with wrestling already. No. It's 1996. And they already don't know what the fuck to do with wrestling.
Their palate has already been tainted.
That opening match is going to set the tone, really, for how far wrestling's going to go as an industry over the next 3 years, 4 years.
Don't worry, Dean, you'll be fine. during the fight, Tony Schiavone encourages us to join the show-long chat on CompuServe.
CompuServe.
Now, WCW very much backed the wrong horse in the net race here because WWF have been plugging their AOL chat rooms.
Yes, and AOL, as anybody who was alive in the 90s will attest to, sent you handy coasters every single day.
They certainly did.
You just get CD after CD after CD with the postman going, hey, here's 10 minutes free internet. You want to try it out?
Hey kids,
it's only 50 quid a month after that for dial-up. Go on, try it.
Go on for 10 minutes, you'll love it. You'll love the internet.
There's gambling on it. And a boob.
I saw a boob on the internet once.
Gosh. How long did it take to load?
Oh, about 3 hours. left it downloading overnight.
I can't stress, because it's not like I'm from the early days of the internet, but fuck me. Like, even when we got internet and we had dial-up, like, anything you wanted to do, a web page to load, you went to WWF.com. It would just sit there going like...
Slow.
And it would it would take like 5 minutes. Like, it's just people don't know they're born these days.
I've gone through 98 TikToks by that point now.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's too much.
And you don't even need to think anymore because they just provide you with infinite scrolling.
Yeah, and limitless bowl that pleases your algorithm.
And then your Apple Watch tells you that you're dying of like liver failure or something. And then you just kind of go, oh.
I've set my liver failure alarm on to snooze.
6 times already today.
My TikTok is all cat videos. I show this to Alex and I said, this is the problem I've got, is it's all cats.
I have the app installed, but
Do you know what? As a social experiment, do try it because the algorithm is fascinating how they do it. Because within like 4 minutes, I tried it once to manipulate it, right?
Yeah.
I was bored one day. I very rarely have a day off. Yeah. I thought, I'm going to try this. So I started liking a couple of videos that had buses in.
Yeah.
And then within 10 minutes, all I was getting was bus videos.
Yeah, this is dangerous, it's like, though. Like, it's so
this is
dangerous.
A hot algorithm.
But it's like, I'm kind of on the fence as to whether I'm going to start an account on it simply because it's just like, fuck, man. It's you're being so catered to now because machines know more about you than you know about yourself, essentially, that you just, it's like living in the fucking Matrix. It's surreal. Mm. Like, everything you want is going to be served to you, whether you want to read it or not. It knows what pushes your buttons. It knows what you're happy with. It knows that if you like cat videos, then hey, let's try a dog video every now and then. And if you don't like that, then it's like, okay, no dogs. What about capybaras? Okay, they like capybaras as well. And then you can start, they just kind of cater everything to you, and it's terrifying, man.
They'd throw me some otters.
It'd be like walking into a restaurant and they just bring you the food.
I'd be delighted with that.
I'd hate it.
I wouldn't leave still chewing. Like, I got shit to do.
They would get you through that fucking door fast enough that you'd leave still chewing.
I would want. I want to crack on with
TikTok
that.
TikTok ran a restaurant. Can you fucking imagine?
Amazing.
Everything would have hot glue in it.
So why is AOL smashing CompuServe? Well, basically, they're offering the same service at half the price at the moment. And it's all shiny. And a
much sexier name.
Much sexier presentation. CompuServe.
Yeah, CompuServe's AOL's like the chat. AOL's just AOL. And CompuServe's just like, CompuServe.
Come join us, please. It's the beta match.
It's the internet.
And I've put here, don't worry, AOL will play a much bigger part in WCW's downfall down the line. Dean Malenko's offense is all about Alex Wright's leg, I promise. Wrapping it around the turnbuckle, deep scissor holds, stomps to the knee.
There's a brutal leg takedown. Oh! Twisted leg takedown where it looks like Wright
comes down.
Yeah, it looks like Wright comes down awfully from it, but I think it was just very good working.
I think they're just
But it was just
workers.
Like, woohoo.
Wright gets back into it by drop kicking Malenko, which is a terrible thing to do when you've had your leg worked over the whole match. He ends up hitting a beauty of a superplex. Flying.
A wonderplex. And then he goes into there's like a weird back and forth, and then he whips him into the corner. You get this weird proto Osprey style step up that wasn't over Malenko's chest. It was up the ropes, but kind of the step up, flip back, keep him guessing. And that's ultimately Das Wunderkind's Das downfall in Das match,
because he gets a Das kick in the low in the leg from under his leg, and then Malenko
gets his leg kicked out of his leg,
and it leads into a roll up from Malenko for a fairly sudden underwhelming finish to what had been quite a fun technical encounter.
Yeah, the match really the crowd warmed to it as it went on, but it ends quite abruptly.
Yeah, it just sort of, it's that, and then it's done. And then we go, when we come back, blah, blah, blah. I've got Dave's Observer ratings for this pay-per-view and the matches. So just to quickly jump back, what did you give Public Enemy and the Nasty Boys?
Dud.
3.25.
Fuck off.
Dave liked it.
Are you for real?
Dave was having a
sad. Are you for real?
I am the most real I've ever been.
Dave.
Dave really liked it.
What are you doing?
I don't know whether Dave had never seen a hardcore match before in his life. Dave was in a good mood.
He fucked off to home base to get a table and then set it up wrong and then proceeded to beat the shit out of him with it when it didn't break.
Dave's ratings for this whole show, as you will see, are weird as fuck.
Is this the week Dave tried acid or something?
I think Dave got shagged and he was in a good mood at the start.
Just celebrating bicycle day for a full-blown week.
Well done, mate. What did he give Alex Wright and Dean Malenko?
I'm going to say 4 because it can't possibly be worse than
Mercifully, it's better than the first match, but it's 3.5.
Okay,
a quarter of a star better from these two.
Because I was gonna, you can't just jump in at that rating. I mean, we know the show's not going to be phenomenal, but like to give that a 3.25.
Dave is very kind to Dubsy Dub. The Taskmaster out next. He's fighting Disco Inferno. Or is he?
No, he's not, because
Elvis is entering the building instead.
Yeah, fat Elvis has turned up with a fried peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And
did you hear Heenan on commentary as they were opining as to why Sir Elvis is out there? Heenan says, maybe he's here to pawn off his daughter to another guy.
Oh, yes, I did hear that. Yeah, that was fun.
Well done.
I will say it's a marked step up from actually having to watch Disco.
Yeah, I'm happy with that.
Fat Elvis. I will kind of be a bit nitpicky, though, you telling me that in the entirety of Las Vegas, you couldn't find a single Elvis impersonator that looked and sounded like Elvis. Because this looked like you dressed up one of the refs and just kicked him out there.
Do you know what? They may have very well done. I couldn't find the identity of this particular Elvis, but I wouldn't be shocked if it was just a wrestler.
It was just
a normal
voice with just thank you very much and just random Elvis bits thrown in.
No ordinary Elvis impersonator, though.
He sounds like he's trying to talk with a mouthful of soup.
Yes.
Or a mouthful hot of soup, just like
fried peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Yeah, which I mean must be like hotter than the surface of the sun.
Yeah.
Alan Partridge style.
Oh, stick it in the microwave. No ordinary Elvis impersonator. He's a singing Telegram Elvis impersonator.
Yes, he is. And the telegram that he sings to them informs Sully that Disco is dancing at the Colonel's wedding. And then Sullivan gets to be all of us in the moment, because wouldn't you fucking love to just beat the shit out of Elvis Presley? Wouldn't you just love it? Could you imagine going back in time and everybody's like, Elvis! And you just knocked him the fuck out and then transferred back to your own timeline. What would happen?
Or was it knocking out the real Elvis?
Well, just any Elvis. But just like real Elvis. Can you imagine like, you just pop up at his big like reunion show when he comes back from the army. Whoopah! Drop him on his ass. America doesn't have a hero anymore. Ivan Drago's going to win.
What if?
That's the rise of the real Rocky Balboa.
What if you went back in time?
There's no Elvis to take him on.
And you punched the real Elvis.
Yeah.
And then disappear. Then you come back to the real timeline and then like it's all normal until like Adam Pacitti walks to the door and goes, oh, hey, Sam, you still coming to the gig tonight? He said, which gig? The Elvis comeback special gig. He's still alive? How is...
Punch sorted him out.
How is me punching him? How has that kept him
alive?
Right,
this is it. We're going to go back. We're not going to do it meanly. We're going to go back to his residency and we're going to either put him out of his mercy, one punch KO, like done. And Elvis's career is ruined and he can never come back from the fact that he just got BTFO'd by Tom, time traveling Tom. Or, you know, he's going to kind of snap out of it and go, maybe I shouldn't eat this 4 a.m. 11th deep fried banana smothered in peanut butter and chocolate on my toilet.
Well, we don't know.
Sorry, golden toilet.
Because the implications of time travel. Like, what if you went back and then before he got on the toilet, you punched him? You come back to this time, and then Adam Pacitti comes to the door and goes, oh, hey, Sam, cheers, great month. Here's your pay this month. And he hands you a jar of jam. And he goes, it's a bit more than last month. What if...
And then I get outside and we all fly around and we're all bee people.
Yeah.
What if you went back in time and you replaced Elvis's colonel with WCW's colonel?
And then you come back to this time period, and Adam Pacitti walks through and he goes... Oh, hey, Sam, are you coming to the human sacrifice later?
Yes, that's a timeline we all need to be part of. Just a giant sky burial type thing.
The fragility of time.
Yeah.
Or like, you punch him and you come back here, and Adam Pacitti walks through the door and goes, oh, Sam, I've got to leave early because the Stargate's opened an hour earlier than we expected today. We all travel via Stargate.
What would happen? We need to find out. Somebody build a time machine.
What if they already have?
Let's go back in time and punch Elvis.
What if they already have?
Well, we wouldn't know. This is the thing.
No, we were being paid in jam in the proper timeline.
We're living in... Well, that's it. We either split off into another timeline where it diverges or we live in the paradox. And so every time something happens, it's just always been that way.
Yeah.
Which is why you've really got to pay attention, you know, when you're looking at JFK and that footage. Because if you look in the background, Grimace from McDonald's has started appearing in the last 2-3 years. And I know for a fact he wasn't there beforehand. And it looks like he's got a rifle.
What if you went back and you punched Grimace?
Right.
Stop it happening. And you come back to this time period and you go through there and you go, oh, hey, Adam, have you got a pen? And Adam goes, why are you asking for a pen when you've got 5 on each finger?
Oh, shit. Cultaholic Twilight Zone.
How did that... See what happens when we have like 2 hours sleep.
God. What if I could go back in time to about an hour and 45 minutes ago and punch myself in the mouth so I don't have to watch this Clash of the Champions?
And then you come back and then you come back in and Adam Pacitti walks in and he goes, oh, hey, Sam. And then he lays an egg.
He just, hey, Sam, did you do that Nitro review? No, I travel back in time and punch myself in the face. Why'd you do that? Get in there and record it. Okay.
Oh, by the way, here's an egg. He's an egg. Time travel.
It's like Homer Simpson. But last one, I promise. But when Homer's traveling through all of the different realities and he has the perfect life, except for the fact there's no donuts. And then he freaks out and leaves. And then it starts fucking raining donuts outside. And oh my God.
Marge goes, it's raining again.
Just bouncing off the floor.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Sorry I couldn't make it to the Clash, sings Telegram Elvis, and we haven't punched to the face. I'm dancing at the Colonel's wedding. It's a big bash. Disco said you're not very hip, but he knows you'll give me a really big tip. And then Taskmaster's fucking twats him.
There's the tip of my fist. Ooh.
The bell sounds randomly. I thought we were going to get a match, and then we don't.
No, we go back to end. Gene at the wedding.
Gene's back at the wedding. Bunkhouse Buck and Dirty Dick Slater arrive, asking where the Colonel is, because nobody knows.
Their promo is literally, each of them are so unintelligible, but Bunkhouse Buck goes, "Hup, derp. Where am the Colonel?" And then a load of other kind of Boomhauer style noises. And then Dick goes, "I'm a whammer by the $1,500 at my table.
Uncle Zebekiah."
It's what the fuck?
They're all Southern, aren't they? It's funny.
I think, you know, if I was having a wedding, there's no two people I would rather have there first than
the Dirty Dick Slater and Bunkhouse Dick Slater.
In full gimmick.
And they say the last time they saw Colonel Robert Parker was they gave him a wedge of notes to spend on the crap.
So 1,500, yeah, because they're like, he's like, "Hey, we'll do it up at the table." And Gene's like, craps? Craps table? And he's like, and it's the first hint that the Colonel has gone AWOL and gambling may be involved.
More on this in a bit. Back to the arena. Bischoff, living on the ramp, welcomes the new world tag champions, Sting and Lex Luger.
Oh, for fuck's sake, Tom. It's Menkesteng.
Oh, sorry, Menkesteng.
And according to the WWE blurb to the right of this, if you're watching it on the WWE Network, Lex Luger.
No, did you say Lex Luger? I didn't spot that.
Lex Luger and Leg, Sting.
Lex Luger and Menkesteng.
Yeah. Lex Luger and Menkesteng.
Lex is delighted with his belt. He's holding it up like a kid who's just done a painting for his mum and dad.
And Sting's just staring at his.
Sting's all right.
Sting's
with it.
Just quite like, reserved, ooh, it's shiny.
But Luger, Lex, is over the moon. Bischoff addresses the controversy in the match. Lex shuts it down by saying, "I said we were the tag team of the 90s and we proved it." Now, as Lex is going wild about he and Menkesteng, the crowd just suddenly go loud. The loudest I've heard them all night.
And while they're making that noise, he goes, "They say this is where the big boys play. These," and points at Sting's arm. "The," like really specifically at Sting's arm.
"Just these arms.
These are the big boys." And then who's behind them? Why the kerfuffle? What's happening? While Lex Luger is being openly grilled in front of Sting, in front of thousands of people, about the fact that he cheated. There was a lot of controversy. Sting is looking at the belt the entire time going, "Ooh, shiny!
Shiny!"
So loud that he can't hear what Bischoff is saying, except he can hear the crowd pop. And then he turns around and immediately starts high-fiving the Road Warriors, and they're all buddies.
The Road Warriors, you say? Here they are. Buddy Road Warriors are out.
Yeah.
And they're in their blue shoulder spice.
Yeah.
I forgot about the blue shoulder spice.
I mean, it's Road Warriors. What more do we need to say? There's a bit of back and forth. Sting is, you know, as I said, high five, and he's happy to see them. But they're kind of happy to see Sting. They're like, you know, "Glad you're doing well, brother," and all this stuff. And then they go on about, like, "But we am the most powerful force in all the Bedes. Gotta beat us. Gotta beat these to be the number one powerful. Gotta beat them. Gotta beat us." So they want to wrestle. Lex has a bit of a cry about it.
Luger's very upset because he says, "Look, we've got a lot on. We've got a rematch with Harley.
Look, there's all this paperwork, guys. It's not the same as back in the day where you had guns and cocaine. Now it's just guns." Sorry, cocaine. So the booking is just done. We don't need to argue about that anymore, guys. The times are changing.
Luger calls the World Warriors Jets by saying, we've got a rematch against the Harlem Heat. We've got the Nasty Boys. We've got American Males. We've got State Patrol, which Bischoff balks at. State Patrol? You'll be forgiven for not knowing who State Patrol are. State Patrol are James R. Wright and Buddy Lee Parker. They're a very, very down-the-line tag team. I guess in terms of like classic, how would you say it in classic SmackDown review terms? It's like Austin Triple H calling out Kai and Tai.
Yeah,
essentially.
They sound like a lovely job gimmick.
Yeah,
you know, Super Troopers. I like it.
So I enjoyed Bishop. I enjoyed Lex going, look, we've got to fight State Patrol before we can fight you lads. Luger says Hawk and Animal have been on the shelf. He doesn't want to face them in their first match back in case he hurts them.
Yeah, because they got bad backs. You know, they got real bad backs. But brother, you couldn't even fit his back in your rack.
That's a good line, actually. I like the rhyming. I like the soliloquiness there.
Yeah.
Couldn't fit his back on your rack. Hawk informs Luger, we have an annual beatings quota.
Right, is that what was said? Because it sounded to me as though he said, they have an anal beans quota. They need victims for this beans quota. Something about beans? It sounds like he says, we have an anal beans quota. Like, it sounds like he says anal, not annual. I was like, what the fuck? I worked it out pretty quick, but it was like, that sounded like he said anal beans.
He has an anal beans.
I might say more about me as a person, but fuck me. It's just, when I heard anal beans, I had to pause and howl.
An anal beans quota. I mean, that's funnier than an annual beatings quota.
Or a new Road Warriors were different to ever before. We have an anal beans quota. He's holding the Callahines.
We have a very different road that we're paving tonight. Oh, God, what a rush.
Fucking hell.
There's a legion of doom coming your way. So anyway, they're a little behind on their anal beads. And they're
it's
hoping
to beads has it.
They're hoping for Stang and Leg to fill the gap. Fill the void.
They're a bit short on them old anal beans. Get in there, Sting.
Stang,
get in there, Luger.
Stang's up for being part of the beads.
Oh, he's like, get me up there.
Get me right up there, lads.
Get me right up there.
Leg a little bit more reluctant as he leaves early. And then they all leave together like nice friends, except Luger, who's a bit ahead of them.
He's just nudging Sting. Why do you want to be part of the anal beans?
Why is he be? Are you sure about this, Sting? Are you sure about this, Stang?
How are you going to fit in there, Mancasto?
Hey, Leg, listen.
You're a big guy. You're like 6'1", mate.
That's... Have you seen the size of Animal? He's massive.
You'll be wearing him like some sort of weird Gundam Evangelion-style mecha thing of flesh.
We get in there with a puffer jacket on. It'd be
yeah. Then I can slip out of the puffer jacket.
Well...
Oh, my God.
After a commercial break and a little sit-down, we get words from Paul Orndorff.
Old Orny. Orny's back. Don't forget about Orny. It's only been, what, weeks? Two months?
I think it's been about 2 months.
Time has melded into one. But the last we saw of him, he was being pile-driven by the 400-pound bear, which... I think that's a bit harsh on fucking Anderson. I wouldn't say he's 400 pounds. That's bullshit. But still, last time we saw him, he was being pile-driven. Pillman was there. Flair was there. It was a very deliberate attack. I think Orndorff was injured in real life, right, and had to be written out for a little bit. So they did this vicious attack with Flair, like, doing the leg spike and everything on the pile-driver. He's carted out, like, non-responsive. They did it quite well, actually, for... It was very hokey. Mm. It was very kind of ER, but at the same time, it you know, for the time, it worked. But he's not somebody we really need to hear from.
Well, the nice thing, well, it's kind of, it does play into kind of what's happening now with the Horsemen, which I quite like, because the whole beatdown of Orndorff started because Pillman got up in Orndorff's grill, so being a little dick.
It is largely about how Pillman can't be trusted, right?
Yeah. It's more the fact that, like, Pillman started a fight, Orndorff walloped him, and then the Horsemen have gone, well, he's one of ours. I know he started it, but we've got to muck in. And then that's why the pile driver happened. Had Pillman not got in the face of Orndorff, they probably would have left him be.
Orndorff, not to be quick with anything promos included, by the way. Starts off a long time ago. And if you imagine the screen going all wiggly, like, he's like, this injury came at the worst time because Gary Spivey offered at least 7 sacrificial lambs to make his wig the night the curse was first born, because Gary Spivey had given him, like, you know, the this big pep talk. And, you know, anybody who doesn't know Gary Spivey is, he is a Psychic Friends Network. He's like a TV psychic. He has, like, very unique, very big, it looks like he's literally got a dead lamb on his head. I'm sorry, there's no way to say it.
I always thought it looks like a scouring pad.
Yeah, it looks like you bleached a Brillo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A bleached Brillo.
Yeah, that's a bit better than a lamb with all of its limbs and head cut off. Sorry.
Yours is a far more dangerous image, which I quite like. But yeah, he's not a well man. His arms are getting weak, but he had that anyway.
Yeah, he said, he has that, I can't remember what it is. It was
atrophy
from, was it from an injury or something?
But so he was doing a run with Hogan on the house show loop, and he got injured, and he had the choice basically there and then, proper sliding doors moment, either go get surgery and miss out on this lucrative payday run with Hogan, or just gut it out.
See it afterwards.
And then he gutted it out, but he did so much long-term damage that his arm atrophied.
Yeah, it's something they're mentioning here.
They're kind of tying it into the story.
He goes on about being old school, and he's like, you know, when you get beaten up, you got to get back up, and you've got to, you know, stomp and kick it on. Orny thinks they hate him because he turned them down, because he wouldn't join the Horsemen. He said he's a good boy who doesn't like gangs or Ric Flair. And then one of the greatest promo line reads of all time, when he says, "They may have crippled my body, but they ain't crippled my heart." And then he stands up.
Because the
standing. Orndorff standing up from the park bench. Oh,
and, and he says, "I ain't going to take this sitting down." Yeah. Stands up.
Bless him.
God love him. And as he finishes his promo, they fade back to the arena. And who's in the fucking crowd?
It's Gary Spivey.
Either number one, as if Paul Orndorff was number one, or pointing to the heavens because Orndorff, you know, is already gone. You know?
There was no word on how many lambs were ritually slaughtered for tonight's hairdo. But safe to say, it was considerably less number than his current daily sacrifice quota, which is a lot. A
slightly smaller one than normal.
Yeah, his current hair is quite big.
Do you reckon Spivey stayed for the whole wrestling show, or was he just paid a lucrative amount just to go and stand in the crowd?
It was in Vegas. He was probably doing a show next door.
Of course.
It's surreal how, like, when we did Double or Nothing, like, each fucking casino has got, like, 5 arenas in it. It's weird. Like, there were queues for everything. It was just like, am I in the wrestling queue? Or is that a queue for... No. Okay. Round there. Is this the one? Is this the... No. Is that the what? No. Okay. Oh, this is the queue. Right. Shit. And then the queue's like a mile and a half long. And it's like, what the fuck? And then as you get in there, there's just more people queuing constantly. It's nuts. He probably just popped round on his 5-minute break when he's done a disappearing act.
But I'll just pop in here.
And he's going, hello!
It's me, Gary Spivey. Lovely to see you. Back to the Little White Chapel we go, where Colonel Rob Parker finally pulls up, urgently asking Gene Oakland for $50.
What a shite ass. What an absolute shite ass there, Colonel. You've messed right up here, haven't you? There's a pissed off taxi driver. There's all sorts of nonsense.
His mobile phone rings, and he speaks to his little fried pie.
Yes.
And says that everything's going to be fine. He's going to do it now, not to worry. Talks down what we believe to be Sherry.
Sherry. What are you on about?
Of course it is. Yeah,
let's keep going.
Of course it is. Back in the ring, Brian Pillman. One-on-one now against Eddie Guerrero. And you know what? There was a moment in wrestling history that I had no idea occurred on this show that we're about to see.
Yeah, it's like really it outshines the match. The match is largely what you'd expect. It's great, but like, it's not exactly... it's not a show where we're getting these mega, mega, mega super blow-off matches. It's sort of a dolled-up Nitro match, really. But you still... You do still see quite a lot of nice action.
Yeah, so more cameras getting pushed around by Flying Brian as he heads to the ring. He's shaking the barricade, acting wild. as Eddie Guerrero heads to ringside. Bobby Heenan says everybody at the airport was talking about Eddie Guerrero, saying, which means either people are impressed by him or they like his mum's chili. Okay, Heenan. Here you go. Apparently, Mike Tenay and Eric Bischoff are on the WCW hotline commenting about certain skits on another wrestling promotion. Yeah. So we mentioned this in the show last week. These are the Billionaire Ted skits that Bischoff has a good old rant about on the hotline this week. We talked about them last time. An iconic moment in Brian Pillman's loose cannon run occurs here.
Well, we've got first the standard Brian Pillman match fare.
Yes.
So that's like, he will go to lock up, sack it off, go tease the crowd, get out of the ring, come back in the ring when the referee's had enough, mug off Eddie again, mug off the crowd again, start throwing the horseman symbol everywhere, mug off the crowd some more, mug off Eddie, lock up a little bit, take down, mug him off some more. Just a lot of mugging off.
A lot of mugging off until he rolls out of the ring quite early on after the mugging off and hides behind commentary. He then starts pulling on Bobby Heenan's sports jacket. Heenan jumps out of his seat and flips out, shouting, "What the fuck are you doing?" He steps away from the table as Pillman pulls away. Now, Heenan is clearly rattled. He picks up his jacket and it looks as if he's leaving the arena, but then he ends up just walking very slowly around in a full circle. Commentary acknowledge it once, but then sort of try and bring it back.
He just dropped fuck. He just dropped fuck on TV.
He just
so
dropped
it's,
an F.
It's it's not ideal. It's a reason that all this stuff needs to be planned in advance. Mm. I mean, the amount of commentary people we worked with in a past life where it was like they need to know everything.
You're gonna do stuff,
because yeah. And usually it's stay the fuck away from the commentary table. Like, yeah. So it's...
It's true. Now, Bobby Heenan in real life has a neck injury as well.
Yeah.
Has serious neck problems. Pillman creeping behind him, messing with his neck, just genuinely rattled him. He sits back down as the match gets underway apologizes.
When he does walk to the ramp, it does look like he's going to leave.
It looks like he's away, isn't he?
Because he stands there for a second. He's looking at the ring. He's looking back at the desk. And then he kind of has that moment, deep exhale, goes back and sits down. But it's like...
Yeah, he's very apologetic as he sits back down. He sounds really upset as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, he's a consummate professional. So
yeah, like, the unflappable Bobby Heenan.
Yeah, getting caught out like that, it can't be nice. It can't have been nice for his pride. And at the same time, it's fucking hilarious. It's amazing. It's like, you know, it's we're live, pal. It's all of those beautiful, like Ray and the fucking, that's going doing the rounds at the minute.
Yeah.
Ray doing the pull-ups and the shelf breaks. Just, there's so many moments where the wrestling mask slips and this is just one of them. And it's great.
Strange match this. Pillman doing some phenomenal character work though. Slaps, stomps, general unorthodox motions, not unlike anybody else on the roster's doing stuff that Pillman's doing. Heenan quite quiet on commentary as well, so there's a weird awkwardness about this as well.
Yeah, Tony even calls Heenan shaken a couple of points, and I was like, oh, yeah. You're gonna fucking eat those words in a bit.
Guerrero gets back into the mix of the tornado DDT, though. They go back and forth. Pillman lands a cross body, and as he lands it, he pulls on the tights to get a cheeky, cheaty three.
But before the three even comes down, Bobby's back to his fucking feet.
Yeah.
Stood up, jacket on.
Pillman, yeah,
back to the crowd, backing away.
To keep away from whatever.
Well,
Pillman
comes out immediately to get out onto commentary table. It looked like because his legs are out over there, and Heenan was just like, "Fuck this!
I ain't doing it. I don't want anything to do with this." Liam O'Rourke has written a brilliant book on Brian Pillman called "Crazy Like a Fox," and I've got the book at home. And when I sat watching this, I must admit, I just went, I'm trying to recall from the book what goes on here. And bless Liam. Thank you, Liam, for dropping me a message just before I came in here to remind me. So basically, this was a legit thing. I know some people ask whether this was a work, whether this was a shoot. This was a legitimate incident.
Well, he wouldn't have dropped the F.
Would not have dropped the F-bomb, even if that had been...
I reckon they would have gone as far as dropping an accidental shit, because WWF did it with Brett. Like, this is bullshit. But fuck was, you know... Big boy word.
I asked Liam, was there any blowback after this? And he said Heenan was more worried that him saying fuck W would get him in trouble with TBS, which it didn't. They told Heenan and everybody else that all the heat for that bit fell on Brian Pillman.
Yeah.
Heenan was happy because it meant, okay, I'm not going to get any wrong for this.
Yeah.
And Brian Pillman was ecstatic. So I was like, all the heat.
Doing my job.
Give me all the heat.
Everybody thinks I'm wild.
Yeah, everyone thinks I'm a cunt. Come on. Like, Pillman's over the moon. That he's getting all the bad. He's getting all the heat for this thing from executives and networks. It's like, yeah, this is exactly what I want. And it's feeding into a much wider story with Brian Pillman that is weeks away from unfolding. It really is. It's incredible. Eric Bischoff's back on the ramp. Hey.
Can I just read this out how it was said?
I would love for you to.
Eric Bischoff with the mic. It's Hulk Hogan, the new heavyweight champion. Macho Man Randy Savage. And from the Pittsburgh Steelers, it's Kevin Green. So they crammed in Hulk Hogan, the new heavyweight champion. And then there's a very brief pause. And then it's just like, Macho Man Randy Savage, as if he's just additional to Hogan being the champion, even though he's not. And then Kevin Green.
The Savage, mate, is getting such a shoo-in in this company at the moment. Hogan's music plays as well, because fuck you, Savage. You're the champ, but I'm playing my music.
Well, Savage was also American-made. It applies to both of us, brother.
Pomp and circumstance, isn't he?
That sounds European. You don't want to be one of those Frenchies, do you?
It's an English song.
You don't want to be one of those Frenchies, do you?
It was written by Edward Elgar, who lives in Worcester, and there's an Elgar statue in my home city.
He was on a note, wasn't he? Was he on the 20?
Elgar wasn't the 20.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lovely statue to him that every Christmas somebody ends up putting a traffic cone on his head.
Bloody so, Frenchies.
Land of hope and glory. And the land of the French. So Hogan's, of course, is out first and speaks first about his mate the Macho Man and how they've got all this positive momentum tonight. Savage puts over the Pittsburgh Steelers' Kevin Green. Everybody does an ooh yeah. Hogan does his last get fucked. Kevin Green promises that if the hospital or the Dungeon of Doom try any shenanigans, he's going to put his head down, his shoulders up, and run right through them like the Steelers will do to the Cowboys on Sunday. Football.
Well, there's a lot of calling him lean, mean Kevin Green, which I quite like.
He looks great as well, my God.
You didn't really do the Hogan line justice because he basically says, what would you do, brother, if the Flair and Giant come all over you? And then Kevin Green immediately says, well, big brother, in like the shittest, the most like blue chipper, like 13-year-old meeting Hulk Hogan for the first time. Like, well, big brother. Momentum dead. But you know, you get, you know, a lot of chat about their final weapon. This is only half of their final secret weapon. And of course, everybody's been promised, you know, a ghost from the past is returning tonight.
Ooh, she came out in a bedcloth. That would have been amazing.
So essentially, it's Liz, brother. Now we are brothers. We got a problem, brothers. Who gets to take Liz home? And this gets very uncomfortable. Who gets to take Liz out on the town tonight?
Maybe ask her.
Kevin goes first, apparently. He's like, Bagsy, me. And then Randy's like, she's a lot harder to handle than you. You can't just expect to take Liz out on the town, guys. You can't just expect. And then Hogan's just like, well, she left you, Randy. She am ride the Hulkster tonight, basically. It's just a really uncomfortable thing of like, well, after the match, who wins Elizabeth? Oh, God.
Who's going to shag Liz? Who's going to shag Kevin Green?
It's just Jesus.
Warriors have got the anal beads. They can help out.
Anal beans, Tom. Beans, not beads.
Well, you play your games and I'll play mine.
Those spikes are going to have to come into play somewhere.
Oh, that's a rush. Tag team action up next. It is Sting. Oh, sorry. Mankind Sting.
That's right.
And Leg Luger.
That's right.
They're facing the Blue Blood.
Yeah.
Now, Regal.
Fuck all happens initially.
Do you know, it's because Regal is coming into this match. Stop me if you've heard this one before. Fucked.
Yeah.
Right? He had a dark match against Benoit before this show started and his knee went out. And they've still gone, oh, I'm sorry to see that your knee's gone out, Regal. Anyway, you're fighting Sting and Luger later.
Yeah, he's pretty heavily wrapped.
Yeah.
Like, his knee is really padded. But why would you have him out in a dark segment?
I have no idea. Like, there's so many other people knocking about. You really had to have work Regal twice.
Saturday night roster that you barely see on Nitro could have been out there warming the crowd
over.
So
many other people you could have used.
But you could have done like a four-way tag or something. There's so much they could have done.
So this is the final stand of Steve Regal and Bobby Eaton as the Blue Bloods, because Regal will be subbed out for David Taylor after this match. We don't know this yet, but Regal's off to go and get surgery on that knee.
Well, it's good because knee gets looked after.
Yes, exactly. Leg Luger is so happy to be a champion. Bless his face. We start with Regal and Menkaz staying. Regal doing some wonderful facial expressions. He's the best at these. I'm really appreciating it on a very different level. Now I'm hearing his podcast where all he does is crack Les Dawson guys.
It's when he's in the corner and he's just like, get off me, you brute! And just stuff like that. It's just great.
It has echoes of, uncurse me, you swine! to Danhausen. Eaton makes a similar face, meets a similar fate early on when he and Regal get bounced around by the Stanger. He gets backdropped on the outside at one point as Eaton. It looks pretty horrible. Luger gives him a
Luger and Eaton have a bit of a dalliance up the ramp. They get about halfway up, I think, just, you know, into the barricades and back down. But, yeah.
Pretty messy. Regal cheap shots Luger to get the advantage. And then we see he and Earl Robert working over Luger. Luger even getting caught in the Regal stretch. Yeah. Didn't even know it was a move at that point.
Yeah, so Sting has to get in and break the rules to help.
Robert Eaton goes off the top rope. Luger tries to catch him for a power slam, but he absolutely flummoxes it.
And then Eaton just goes right back up, doesn't he?
Just pops back up like he countered it.
Yeah.
They do the double clothesline, double down. Luger makes the hot tag to Menkaz Stang.
Yes.
Who runs riot from here. Luger gets a punch in the back of the head from Regal.
And is that when we get like four of them at once going at it in the ring, and then it leads to the end, which is like...
The ending's quite creative.
It's a bit inventive.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, it was going to be the result we thought it would be anyway, because otherwise they'd have been, I think, the least longest reigning WCW tag champions up to that point, because they would have held them for, what, one night?
Yeah, so they had to win. They're always going to win. We see Eaton going back up top. Sting bounces off the ropes, which sends him off the top, crashing into Regal.
Yes.
And then moments later, Sting puts the death lock on Regal, who has a fucked up knee, by the way. Could Eaton have not tapped out?
Yeah.
Could we not have
just given it, you know.
There's a few things in this show I just go, you know, could you not have just spent like five more seconds on that and just gone, actually... Let's do it this way.
It ties up one nice little bow in this massive fucking ball of headphone cables that is the Lex Luger storyline with Sting, because Blue Bloods were a team that, you know, we just kind of been seen thrown around into random things. So we've had periods of this weird Lex Luger thing in WCW again, feature the Blue Bloods. So like now that that's done, Regal's off to get surgery. You got to figure the fingers crossed we're not going to see any more Blue Bloods popping up. To kind of muddy the waters there.
Oh, you'll be a lucky boy. This is probably the neatest that the Luger and Stang thing has been.
Yes.
Because it's been like so messy every single week about, oh, I accidentally hit you. I accidentally hit you.
I didn't mean to do it, but champions, bro.
But this is like nice and clean.
I slammed Yokozuna. They gave me a big bus.
All right, Lex, calm down. Well done. I didn't like the bus. It was shit, so I got to play it everywhere.
I flew everywhere because I'm a misery guts.
He is a fucking misery guts at that point, which is funny. At this point on Raw, by the way, on Raw, Vince McMahon says, oh, Shawn Michaels is riding the Heartbreak Express. I'm like, don't you bring another fucking bus into this. Jesus H. Christ. But they don't, thankfully. Let us go back to the chapel. Booker T and Stevie Ray have turned up. They're complaining about KT.
They are picking that fucking buffet table apart, and good on them. I think they're like, what is this shit? You've got buffalo wings. You've got like fucking, what is this?
Well, it's Robert Parker's terrible. Like, I've got no money for the buffet.
He's just like, oh, it's fine, guys. It's fine.
It's at this point that we learned that they were originally going to get married in the chapel, but because Robert Parker is skint now, they're now getting married in the drive-thru.
And Sherry's not happy.
Now, is Sherry...
Because Sherry's just arrived and she's like, well, I need to get dressed and everything. And he's just like, oh, you'll have to find somewhere. There's a trailer over there. And then you've got Butch and Dick going, don't come in the trailer. There's a dog in there.
Don't come in the trailer. There's some exposition in here.
Yeah.
Don't come in here.
It's there's real angry. Don't come in.
There's a plot twist in here. Don't come in. Is Sherry pissed? Is she looks battered.
She, I think like the whole thing has been that Colonel puts almost like a spell on her, right?
Right.
She seems to, every single time in the build up to this whole, I guess we can call it a payoff, maybe. everything in the build up, whenever Colonel would come out, she just all of a sudden, almost like she was hypnotized, stopped what she was doing. She could have been about to hand Harlem Heat a belt to use in a match. She stops what she's doing, and she just becomes intoxicated by the Colonel. So I don't know if it's just that she's still in this bubble of joy and it's just kind of, she's acting sort of out of it really, because it's almost like the Colonel's got that effect on her. But yeah, either way, she's not very happy. It's the first time we've heard her voice dissatisfaction at the Colonel. And yeah, like they're like, oh, we lost the trailer key. You can't get dressed in here. There's an angry dog in there anyway. Oh. Don't go in there. And then we end things there.
Eric Bischoff is on the ramp. Oh, and by the Shivani and Heenan are yucking up the fact that the wedding is like there's the wedding's fucked because there's no money.
I officially had a better Vegas wedding than Sherry Martel.
Well done. You didn't. There's still a bit more to play out. Heenan made me laugh. He went, where are they going to honeymoon? Pick a corner. It's a good line, that.
Well, he can't go far, can he?
Yeah, that's great. Eric Bischoff's on the ramp. He invites his guest, Brian Pillman, out.
Oh, and Bischoff is shitting himself.
Yeah, because Pillman's threatening to say the seven deadly words that you can't say on TV.
And every time Pillman opens his mouth and kind of does the Jake the Snake pause, then he's going to kind of, you know, when you pause and you get suckered to leaning in and then he kind of snaps at you. Every time that, like, Bischoff is just pulling that fucking microphone away as fast as he can. He is just trying to get that mic away from him as fast as he can. And then he's like, oh, no, you're not saying it. Okay. Oh, you didn't swear. Okay. The initial bit of Pillman's promo, it's like, it's just sort of like, well, let me tell you.
He's so nervous. It's great. Incidentally, for those who are interested to know, shit, piss, fuck, cunt, cocksucker, motherfucker, and tits.
Carlin.
There you go. Anyway, Pillman addresses Orndorff and his concept of respect. He says, it's what pumps the ice water through the horseman's black heart. He says, I'm not Hogan, I'm not Savage, and I'm not Savage, and I'm not Sting. You're right, I'm Brian Pillman. Don't you ever forget it. And I will teach you respect, even if I have to hack your thumbs off.
And the whole thing here is that respect has to be earned. The reason Arn slapped me was because of the respect he held for me. And, you know, so it does line up because, you know, the horsemen don't have much except respect for each other, holding them together.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can kind of spin that as, you know, he didn't think I was behaving in a way that was best for me.
Exactly.
So
there's I quite like it. I like Pillman's great. Pillman's brilliant.
It's just there's nothing. You can't even give notes. It's just
no,
funny.
He's just
great to watch.
Brilliant. Conan up next. He's taking
Sorry,
on
Teenage
Psychosis.
Mutant Ninja Conan.
What an outfit Conan has here.
Psychosis with his mid-90s boss music from like a side space shooter game. And then out comes Conan to Eye of the Tiger with his full Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles get up on, basically. And then, yeah, he's got the AAA logo on the back of his shorts. And we're getting ready for some lucha. We got Mike Tenay in the booth.
Yeah.
And he's trying to fill in all the gaps. For everybody watching along.
And we're very glad of Tanay being out there. This is the in-ring debut in WCW, I believe, of Conan.
Unless he'd done something on Saturday night, yeah.
Oh, I think he'd done stuff in the past, but I think this is the first clash.
I think he popped up, what, 2 weeks ago? Commentary.
Yeah, he went to the commentary table. He went, hey, this is the Mexican Championship. I'm going to defend it against my rival Psychosis at Clash of the Champions. Seeing a bit, Dickens.
They do a bit of world building here. It's like, you know, well, the promotion Conan represents and Psychosis represents. That's where Eddie Guerrero came from before he was here. And they're really trying to get over that this is, you know, a new crop of talent that they have now got their mitts on and that they have a working relationship with said company. And so if you like the exciting daredevil styles of Eddie Guerrero, you ain't seen nothing yet.
You're right, by the way. This isn't his first dalliance in WCW. He debuted at Starrcade in 1990, teaming with Rey Mysterio Sr.
I was going
to
say,
in the Pat O'Connor Memorial Cup.
Because wasn't Conan like Rey, like Rey Jr., like somebody who'd been wrestling since they were like 12, 13?
Yes. So he was doing weight training like in his early teens.
Yeah.
And De Los Santos was a big fan of his, like when he was 18 years old. And he was basically told, look, you're taking on a life of crime here. You've been charged with assault, drugs selling, motorcycle theft, grand theft auto.
Why not just become a wrestler
theft?
And make that your gimmick?
He ends up joining the Navy off the back of this, but then from that, he gets into weight training and stuff like that. And it was De Los Santos, who saw Conan on his 24th birthday and said, that Charles Ashenoff, he should try the wrestling. And he did, and the rest is history. He became El Centurion to start with.
Was this around the time
Conan the Barbarian?
Because he's K-Dog. Is this around the time where he calls WWF just to see what the crack is? And I believe he's patched through to Bruce Pritchard. I don't know if it's this time or slightly later, but he's patched through to Bruce Pritchard and he's like, hey man, it's K-Dog. And Pritchard's just like, uh-huh, yeah, send me a tape, not realizing who it was. And it led to this like bitter spat between them for a little bit. Mike Tenay putting over the fact like Conan is a big deal in Mexico. He's not just a wrestler, guys. Like, he's got an album. He's had bit parts in movies. He's getting TV roles. He's, you know, doing all this stuff. Like, he's a real crossover sensation. So if Mexico loves him, you're going to love him. And bless him. He's just doing as much as he can to really put over the fact that audience is kind of new to all this. And yeah, it's good.
By this point, we'd already seen him very briefly as part of the WWF. The Max Moon debacle. Again, like WWF had a custom suit made for this wacky gimmick. I think he wore it once and
told
then...
Vince, are you sure you want me to wear this? Isn't this just Jushin Thunder Liger's gimmick? And Vince went, I have no idea what you're talking about, pal. And Conan's like, I worked a show that Vince co-promoted like 3 years earlier, and Vince was openly chatting to... And there's a picture, I think, from the event of Vince pointing down the ramp while Liger's making his entrance in full Liger gear. And Vince is like, never heard of him.
Conan said to WWE.com on why he left and didn't go back as Max Moon. He said, because I knew English, Vince assumed I knew how to wrestle American style. He put me in the ring with some American wrestlers, but I couldn't have good matches, so he let me bring wrestlers from Mexico to wrestle with me. They were even going to call me Latin Fury at one point. I didn't care what they were going to call me. I just thought it was a really cool looking outfit. Very futuristic. What ended up happening was I started to get tired of lugging these boxes to WWF events. At the same time, business was starting to pick up for me in Mexico, so I left.
You think they keep that shit on a crate?
Yeah,
like, take your singlet, take the bits of your wrestling.
Have to lug this shite around
because he'd have to, like, he'd have to put that whole box, fucking like fiberglass or whatever the hell it was, like suit on. But like, he would take all that off to wrestle in like a more like latexy, leathery thing. Like, keep that. But like, fucking surely WWF would have taken the rest of it, because like, especially with that sort of stuff, if that gets broken, you can't just go to a shop and replace it.
No.
You got to get somebody to fucking cast it, to fix it, to do all this shit, repaint it. Because the whole thing was he was a spaceman from the future. Bollocks. Absolutely fucking. Conan in like a year's time is the coolest motherfucker in wrestling.
God, like, yeah.
Hands down, somehow, in the middle of the NWO shit. Like, Conan is just, you can't take your eyes off him. Everything he does, everybody he surrounds himself with, it's just gold.
It's absolute gold. And he can wrestle an incredible Mexican style and proves it here. Lucha Libre showcase, quick and technical. It feels different.
Yeah, it's fast. It's deliberate. It's just like reversey as fuck. But it does slow down a bit. Like, the pace does kind of wear off, but you're getting kind of the crash course of Lucha. Like, fast reversals, brutal takedowns, like mid-reversal if there's a chance. You know, like being able to quickly stand up and go, no, in fact, but just do this instead. Like, quick mind changes. And yeah, it's especially the initial phase is very Lucha.
Yeah, we see multiple German suplexes near the start, as well as a catapult into an STF. I thought was nice. Top rope arm drags from Conan. We see a dive outside the ring from Psicosis. Conan recovers from that, hits an avalanche German suplex. Now, he looks like he's going to go up top and then changes his mind and instead goes to the ground. I believe it's a standing figure four, complete with muscle pose. That is the finish of this match. Because I thought, oh, that's just like a little showcase.
Mexican
thing.
World champion, man.
Yeah, like... he does that and then Psicosis taps out. Like, oh, I thought that would be like a showboaty thing. Like, no, that's the actual finish. Oh, okay.
That's how you get the additional torque. It's just, you really got to get all those muscles going in your legs.
Lovely showcase of Conan. Like, I would want more of this on my television.
For sure. You know, by the time we get to the LWO, man. Why have we got to sit through the fucking... We've got to go for, like, so long before this starts getting, like, unmissable.
I don't know what you mean. We're this quality all the way round. Let's go back to the Whitechapel!
That's right.
Sherry's getting changed in the back of a limo.
Well, Sherry's feet are sticking out the window of a limo. One with a shoe on.
I thought we'd missed the wedding, gone straight to the honeymoon. Parker's request for money has gone from $50 to $30.
He just needs 30 bucks, guys.
He needs 30 bucks.
He's hassling everybody.
Tries to get Sherry's purse.
Yeah. And then Gene offers, he kind of butts his way and offers to give Sherry away, and she's ecstatic, bless her. She's like, of course. And he's like, we've known each other a long time. And he asks her and she's like, yeah. But we're doing the drive-through wedding. It's all confirmed. Sherry's on board with it. And again, yeah, I had a better Vegas wedding than Sherry, and I feel like a princess because of it.
Well, let's find out, because after the plug for the hotline, we go to the main event of the wedding segments with Sherry walking down the car park, looking like an alien queen from Xanadu.
And Gene's like, you know, arm in arm as he is. He's walking down the aisle or down the car park. And the wrestlers in attendance are singing the bridal march.
Bunkhouse Buck, Dirty Dick. You tell me your wedding was better than Bunkhouse Buck and Dirty Dick singing Here Comes the Bride.
But then
Buck has a little tear as well.
Gene's like, so where have you been? Like, obviously he called you earlier. And she's like, I've not talked to Robert since Monday. And he's like, yeah, but no, you must have talked to him because he called you earlier. And she's like, no, Gene, I've not spoke to Robert in like 3 days or like 2 days or something. It's a bit like, uh-oh, shit. And then we get up to the does anyone object part. By the way, me and Gene standing in the middle of them for the entire thing, pretty much, to the point where Colonel has to keep asking him to move out the way because all you can see is just Gene in the middle of this sea of people. You can't even see the woman at the window. And we get up to the does anyone object part. Nobody objects. And then we were cut to a mysterious reverse camera angle, which may explain why we couldn't see a close-up shot of the woman at the window. Because we see Colonel Robert Parker looking at us. We see Sherry Martel looking at us. And Sherry Martel's there. Colonel's there. They're looking, talking to each other, doing the wedding shit. And then the door of the trailer opens and out comes the angry dog.
It is the angriest of dogs.
The key does not appear to have been misplaced. I think there's some shithousery afoot here.
5 seconds after Speak Now or Forever Hold Your Peace. Why are WWE so shit at timing run-ins? It's Medusa who charges towards the wedding procedure. And
wedding procedure.
The wedding...
Procession?
Procession! It was a procedure by this point.
It fucking felt like
she
it.
She slaps the taste no out of anesthesia. Sherry's mouth, and they brawl on the catering table. They brawl on the tarmac. Former 5-time world champion and WWE Hall of Famer Booker T attempts to split up Hall of Famer Medusa and Hall of Famer Sherry Martel, but slips over in cake. In an unintentionally hilarious moment of this whole bollocks.
Medusa, though. Colonel, you dog.
Yeah.
You absolute dog.
So it turns out that Rob Parker's been boinking Medusa as well.
And everybody thought 96 was about who's the third man. It was actually about who's the little fried pie.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that.
That's
Let's not reels. Diminish that in wrestling history, everybody. Fuck the third man. He's a racist anyway. We're going to get down to the fact that we need to find out who the little fried pie is.
And this
is
it.
You know, it's a one-night mystery, but, I mean, all-timer.
All-timer.
It's right at the top of all the lists, even today.
Buck and Dick take Medusa away and we fade to commercial. Shivali and Heedon have all the questions.
Yeah, but not before. Hot Pockets, burn your mouth. Burn your mouth with leaner Hot Pockets. That's burning your mouth, but leanly. And then we get Slim Jim. And then
don't burn your mouth, leanly.
And then, it's time for Michael Buffer to stand there and do the Let's Get Ready to Rumble, but with a W in front of it.
Wombling. Who's wombling in our main event of the evening? It is Ric Flair and the Giant, who are out first, accompanied by Jimmy the Gentleman, Jimmy Hart. Didn't know his surname was Gentleman. And then out comes Savage and Hogan.
Hold
to
on.
Hogan's let's, music.
Let's out comes in order.
Sorry.
Hulk Hogan's music, then Hulk Hogan. Then a lovely long pause. Then Randy Savage just kind of opens the curtain and shuffles through.
Kevin Green gets a big shout. Woman and assorted ladies out next. And then Savage's music hits.
Yeah, because where the fuck's Big Liz?
Here she is, mate.
And it's really uncomfortable because, I mean, fucking hell, she's wearing the same outfit as Nancy.
I hate when that happens. Michael Buffer acts like he had no idea this was going to happen.
It's very
ladies and gentlemen,
wearing the same dress as Nancy.
Awkward as fuck. She's back.
Very Hogan behavior. Just walks past her like, I can't believe you're wearing the same outfit as me.
I'm not taking you out now.
She steel chair. No, she obviously she just does. She plays the Miss Elizabeth part. She comes down to the ring. It's It's not quite where we're going to see Liz end up in WCW, but it's certainly where, you know, because Liz is sort of in and around the main scene a lot through the later 90s with the NWO and everything. But it's sort of, it's a new Liz. This isn't the same Elizabeth we've seen before. She's got slightly different hair. She's older now. She's not going to be presented in the same way she used to be, except for maybe these first few occasions.
Yeah.
So it's very kind of, hey, it's Liz back, everybody. But slowly Liz is going to become a more featured part of things, and it's going to be a different Liz. But so we are going to see a new side of her.
Some things stay the same. She looks as confused as ever.
Yeah.
She never looked comfortable.
It's, no, but I could you imagine, like, I, if you were, well, no, because you've done managing and shit before, but if, like, if I was just randomly, you know, oh, can you come down to the ring with me? Like one of my mates, I'd just be like,
here I am.
She, I don't know what the fuck to do. What am I doing?
I think because she was always so meek and mild. There's not really much you can do. You can't really high five. No, but she was like the queen.
She was the every woman, though, wasn't she? She was like, and there's a whole thing of like, I think, doesn't Heenan have a go about how she's dressed? And it's like, it's the whole thing. Like he says, oh, it's not how she used to dress. She used to whatever the fuck. And it's like Liz was an average person in this extraordinary world. And that's why everybody kind of fell in love with Liz.
Now she's big for her britches.
Yeah, now she's big for her britches, Liz.
Bitch.
And it's going to be a bitchier side to Liz we're going to see moving forward.
The psych out between all four teams sees at one point Flair get on the microphone and tell Kevin Green he's going to get hurt on Sunday and blame it on the Nature Boy.
Yeah, then Kevin Green gets out of the ring and he puts his jacket back on, which is a shame because he did look like one of the terrorists from Die Hard for a little bit. And I was like, oh, give him a German accent. Go on.
Strong look.
Have a whole Tron where he's just running around some offices with, like, you know, it's sort of like a big roll neck on, and it's Christmas, and he's looking for John McCain, who is John McCain, John McClane.
John McCain.
He's looking for John McCain.
He's the man that invented
presidential candidate John McCain.
John,
just hiding around corners with no shoes on. I need to see a remake of Die Hard with John McCain in it now.
John!
I need to see it happen.
Holding McCain oven chips as well.
Oh,
as add to it. So John McCain, nowhere to be seen as the match properly gets underway. Savage gets starts hot, then he gets one-upped by the baddies because of course he does.
Yeah.
This leads to the Giant getting a tag in and he wants to fight Hogan because fuck the world champion, I want to fight Hogan.
Yeah, but then Fee-Fi-Fo fun boys, I smell the Hulkster getting a big meaty tag. Hulkster gets in. So Flair really at the start here just gets taken around the bases. It's just kind of Flair getting the fuck beaten out of him in an overly comical way.
They redo the Hogan Andre bit from Mania with Hogan failing to slam the big lad, and it leads to Hogan getting a beating for a long time.
Not before Bobby kind of denies Hogan ever slammed Andre.
Yeah, I don't
know. And he's like, well, you know, there was also like a two count there that didn't get, like, the referee didn't do anything.
He then, as after missing a leg drop, Giant misses a leg drop, Hogan gets up and hits the slam. He slams the Giant. A spot that was the highlight of WrestleMania 3 is basically an attempt at a hope spot during a tag match because fuck you, I'm Hogan. Flair gets tagged in immediately after this and gives Hogan a suplex, and Hogan pops up, beats up Flair for a little bit.
It's go home time.
It nearly is. The match breaks down. Giant getting his revenge on Hogan and squeezing him outside the ring. Half a Halloween Havoc bum in there. Flair gets thrown off the top rope by Hogan. Hot tags to Savage. Match falls apart again. Hogan and Giant are brawling outside the ring. Ref's distracted by Jimmy Hart, and Flair has himself a weapon.
He just starts reaching into his pants, and then he pulls out something that's all taped, so knocks, obviously.
He clobbers Savage with said item and pins Savage, the WCW World Champion.
Just want to say this match was also brought to you by McDonald's, so both McDonald's segments tonight were complete shitfests. You deserve it, Ray. I really hope your corporation got their money's worth on this one. You bastard.
Kevin Green is explaining to the referee what happened, but the Dungeon of the Doom and Flying Brian Pillman hit the ring.
Doesn't give a shit. He's like, what?
Mate, I'm more than a jobber.
The music's fucking playing, man. It's too late now.
I'm going out. I'm off shift, mate.
I got my money before the fucking show. What are they going to do?
Green helps Hogan beat up the baddies as Savage, the WCW World Champion, is just out on the floor.
Rolling around, knackered, holding his head.
The Kevin Green bit got a lot of press in USA Today.
As it would.
As it would. Yeah. Nice shout by Dubsy Dub. But fuck Savage, just be left to be the patsy in all of this. Miss Elizabeth gives him like a sympathy raising of the hand. Yeah, you know she went home with Hogan night.
They raise his hands up and then we just kind of go off and then it's sort of like, oh, fireworks, something's happening backstage. My favourite thing was the fireworks went too early, I think, because there's just one firework blast over like Randy doing that. Just like one firework blast, like bang. And then you cut out to the wide. It's like something.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
What's happening backstage? And then they go, bah, 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 bah. It's like, oh, we've not got time. No.
I want to think that was a rib by Heenan.
Woof.
So backstage, I don't know, fuck you lot. So that's the Clash.
Should I stay or should I go now? Like, it was an all right show, you know. It wasn't like, it wasn't terrible.
I think because Nitro has been so turgid for the last couple of weeks. This felt like taking a nice bit of a soft mint in the mouth.
Yeah, it was like eating a peppermint patty or.
It was rather, wasn't it? It was rather
peppermint. It was how you feel when you chew five gum.
Nice. Five gum sponsorship would be nice.
It would be.
Nice.
Some gum, you bastards.
We'll be back next week with another classic Raw review. Sorry, another classic Nitro review.
Yes.
Easy Tiger.
I know.
Ooh,
Putting me on that shite. They got a business. What's the point?
Until our next Back Together, you can reach out classic@cultaholic.com. He is @TheSoundDriver on Twitter. I'm @TomCampbell on Twitter. Together, we're @Cultaholic on Twitter. Don't forget. We're overdosing anal beans.
Anal beans.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.